Hello, everybody. Dr. Ben Edwards here, Veritas Medical. Another great show for you today. We've got an exciting guest, and I know we've talked COVID-19 for 2 years now, and I'm kind of talked out, but there are important things, important work that still needs to be done here. And we've had lots of great guests on, but today's guest, I would say, and man, this is going to be right up there near the top, because he has such a profound understanding of the big picture and what's really going on. As more and more is being exposed and more people are waking up to the fact that this was way more than just some random coronavirus pandemic that came out of nowhere. So today's guest, we have Dr. Peter Breggin. And Dr. Breggin and his wife Ginger wrote a book. And the name of that book is COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. And I encourage everybody to get this book that has over 1,100 references. So I've asked Dr. Breggin to come on today to discuss this book. And real quick, as some background, Dr. Breggin is a physician with over 70 scientific articles and over 20 medical texts and popular books. He is among the world's most experienced medical experts in landmark legal cases in psychiatry and neurosurgery, and now in COVID-19. And the Breggin's bestsellers, other than this book, include Talking Back to Prozac and Toxic Psychiatry. I encourage y'all to go check those books out. They're great reads. And their research led the U.S. to cancel the deadly Chinese collaboration. Welcome, Dr. Breggin. And I would add to that introduction now, it seems like, investigative journalist and author to that. You've done an amazing job in this book. And for anyone who questions the mainstream narrative, or questions me though as to why do I question the mainstream narrative, why would I not trust the CDC, why would I potentially not trust the FDA and these authorities, I point them to this book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. I also point them to Robert F. Kennedy's book. I mean, those two books together, it's just an obvious picture has been laid out. So thank you, Dr. Breggin, for your work. Give my thanks to your wife Ginger too. And welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. The book can be gotten on any of the major bookstores online, like, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And we do have a very inexpensive e-book that you can get online from Barnes & Noble. I think it's $2.99.
Okay.
$2.99 for this very huge and detailed book. I wanted to be sure anybody could get it. You can buy it directly from us at a discount, but just the book itself in the United States. And that's at wearethepray.com.
Okay.
One of the things that I was, that's about the book that's so important in terms of its validity is, Bobby Kennedy himself, right when his very good book was coming out, endorsed our book as the book to go to for, quote, the global conspiracy, the criminal conspiracy behind COVID-19. And that's such a really moving endorsement that he would do that. And we have introductions by three of the top doctors in the world. You know all of them. Of course, Peter McCullough, MD, MPH, writes a sterling and strong introduction. Zev Zelenko, who was the original person to come up with how to treat successfully. And then, of course, McCullough has written the most about it and done a great deal of research on it. And then Lieve Leet, who's the head of a wonderful organization called truthforhealth.org. They wrote introductions to the book. So it's got really good bona fides, the book. And we really put our heart and soul into it, right? Writing it over many, many, many months. I do the writing. Ginger does a lot of the research with me, a lot of the best ideas and the publishing of it and the publicizing of it and so on.
I can vouch for that. I agree 100%. It is the go-to reference book if you want to really understand what's going on with COVID-19.
Now, a lot of things struck us about diving into this. The first thing that struck us that is so important in regard to what you were saying about trust is we were in March 2020. Now, it's just a month or two after we started to hear people talking about this. We were listening to all the conversation about how this couldn't have come from the Wuhan Institute. Fauci is saying the Chinese didn't do this. And the big journals were going along with this. Somewhere in there, Lancet published a letter from scientists around the world that the Chinese couldn't have been involved in it. By the way, all but one of their, whatever they were, their 20 scientists, turned out to have a direct financial consulting relationship with the Chinese communist regime in the Wuhan Institute. Yeah. But we were listening to all this, and this didn't make a lot of sense to us that they could be so sure about this. We just didn't like the sound of Fauci because he talked about that he was science, and no one is science. Science is a very cooperative, competitive, evolving human enterprise where ideas change, data changes, interpretations change. One generation dies and another generation actually comes in with all dramatically different viewpoints. And especially in anything about behavioral sciences and politics and something as broad and amorphous as public health, the idea that somebody is the ultimate authority indicates that he is trying to be a dictator. Mm. And he might as well have said, I am the dictator of science, as far as we were concerned, to discredit himself.
So we were suspicious right off the bat, basically because of the verbiage coming out of this Fauci in particular, but some of these other medical authorities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And we're thinking about whether we should get involved. I've been known for decades as the conscience of psychiatry. We came under very bitter attack in the 1990s for taking on the drug companies. I did a lot of testifying against the drug companies, which kind of prepared us for this work. But it also made us know that these people, literally killed critics, and they've gone after my medical license and threatened us and all kinds of things I don't even want to discuss. So we weren't sure whether to, take it on all over again on an even higher level politically. And then Ginger found an article published in a major journal in 2015. That's 5 years before the pandemic. And rings in and she says, Andy, I think they're talking about making SARS-CoV viruses. I mean, they're making them in a lab, looks to me like. And we were just getting used to all the language and, using the dictionary and getting all the words straight in this new field, like so many, many of us. Perhaps, Ben, you went through the same thing. It was like not your chosen field before you went into it.
Yep.
And we just felt, probably share that, just compelled by the truth and maybe by God, too, that, that this was just a big deal. It had to be dealt with. And so I'm studying the article with her, and the first thing we notice is that, yes, they are making numerous SARS-CoV viruses. There is no question about that. They're deadly. They've taken harmless viruses out of the bats in a cave, which they love to do, a Chinese cave, a couple hundred miles at least away from Wuhan. Very unlikely the bat found his way there. And by then, we were seeing a lot of reports that the didn't come from the wet market. They didn't even carry bats in a wet market. And, it started right near the Wuhan Institute, and the only P4, highest elevation possible for research and viruses that the Chinese have. I mean, it seemed like a strange coincidence. And then we noticed, it's like just bits and pieces flashing up in our eyes. There's two Chinese authors on the paper, and we don't know who these people are at this point. And I look up right on the paper where do they say they're from, and they both say they're researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Then I look at what is the what are these viruses doing to the animals? They're using petri dishes with human epithelium, lung epithelium in them. They're using Franken mice with human epithelium in their lungs, and they're using regular mice. And they got older mice and impaired mice, and they're studying the effects on them of this coronavirus and of the vaccine. And we see in this one article unfolding ahead in front of us enough material to make the predictions for the catastrophe that we're facing, because it notes that it's very hard to make a coronavirus vaccine, and in fact none have ever been made. They've been trying to make coronaviruses, SARS-CoV viruses, not my coronavirus, SARS-CoV viruses since about 2003, when there was a much smaller epidemic, and they haven't been able to do it. And furthermore, if you vaccinate an animal and then expose it to the virus, it sometimes kills them. It causes a huge inflammatory storm. And furthermore, they're talking about how if the animal is older and impaired, it is at serious risk from the vaccines as well as from the disease itself. And it is clearly laying out all the problems that are ahead for everybody. There's no indication of a roaring success of any kind other than they've made a deadly virus. And then I look at what is this virus doing clinically. It's doing exactly what SARS-CoV was quickly described as doing, which is it's killing the older mice or making them more sick, and the impaired mice impaired in their immune system and in other ways. So older and impaired mice, and that's very unusual. It's unique because usually, like with the flu virus, the children are at grave risk too, not in this case. So it's like this whole thing is evolving. And I would write blogs that essentially described everything that was going to happen. In the process, we quickly, and then I found another article that Ginger did. She does a lot of the good research along with me. She came in with a 2016 article by the same group. They're from North Carolina, very famous North Carolina researcher down there, and gets a lot of money from Fauci. Fauci's been doing gain of function research with him for since before 2000. That's how big a liar Fauci is about. We don't support gain of function research at NIH and at NIAID. How about dozens of research studies all over the world, basically? And most of them down in the North Carolina, Chapel Hill, University of North Carolina, and a number of them with China scientists alone getting funded by Fauci. And some of them at the Wuhan, some of them are at other places. And all these places in China are military facilities. Can't remember if that dawned on us immediately, but he was basically committing treason, helping the Chinese tune up their biological weapons and their defenses against biological weapons, all in this one paper. And then we find another one in the next year, 2016. And this one doesn't have any Chinese on the list of people. It's a follow-up paper on the SARS-CoV virus that they've made. And I look at the acknowledgments, and they are thanking Jingli Li, who was one of the co-authors originally, and they're thanking her. And I later discover she's the famous Batwoman, big deal in the research community and the military community in China for this work, that she is thanked for help in sending them work that helped them in the development of the spike protein. So we're working with the Chinese on the deadly spike protein that makes all those spiky things around the virus and enables the virus to penetrate into the human cells. So we got in touch. We had knew some people who actually were close to the Trump family, and we published this, the article and the video. Video, I think, one of them went right up to 40,000, and we asked them to send it to the Trump to the Trumps, and they did. They wrote back, "Done," and no details, just done. And 2 days later, Trump announced at one of his press conferences that he had heard about the funding of the Chinese Communists by our NIH and NIAID with Fauci, and he's canceling it. And he did. So we thought, oh my Lord, we are having an effect. I'm not sure there were any equally great high points until we got the response to the book. And we thought the book was going to sell 500 copies out of the garage, because even though I had 20 establishment books published, you know, St. Martin's and Perseus and other very big publishers, I knew there's no chance of that with this. And I wasn't even sure conservative publishers would take it, and we wanted to have complete control over it. And we ended up so far selling probably over 90,000 copies now. So that was another very, very gratifying thing. But let me take a breath and help me in any direction you want to go in. So that's how we got started, and that laid out for us what we were facing.
Right. Well, I'd like you to, pretty much kind of like you lay out in the book, for the person that's thinking, well, you know, this gain of function research, you know, it was probably for some beneficial thing, and you know, there was no malfeasance here, and you know, maybe there's some benefit to figuring out how a coronavirus can infect the lung epithelium of a human and the spike protein, and you know, there's some beneficial thing here. For you, what would, as you continue to dive into this and look at this and bring these pieces together, because, and ultimately come to this conclusion that there's predators out there, global predators, and we're the prey. How do you get from maybe a few scientists in a lab in Wuhan and Chapel Hill both, kind of just doing their little thing, to this entire global scheme that envelops so many others? Kind of walk us down that path, if you will, that ended up this global predator.
Well, there was a uniformity of the claims coming out of the World Health Organization, the Lancet, the big American journals, the big philanthropic groups, Bill Gates, and another great big philanthropic group in England, and it was just uniform, the CDC, and everybody was saying that we must get a vaccine and for this SARS-CoV-2 virus. So we absolutely had to get a vaccine for it because it was going to come out of nature, and it was going to cause havoc. And we had to prepare ahead of time for it. And that was the whole excuse. We had to make viruses that would be similar to the ones nature would make, and prevent the what's called, you know, the emergence from nature, a natural process, and be ready for it, and spend billions and billions of dollars on that, and organize with the UN, and organize with the organizations like Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum, make agreements with the UN and the World Health Organization, and just really get going, get the EU, the European Union involved, you know, just really get going, and make sure we do this, because we're in danger all along of this happening. And just as this one so supposedly emerged from nature, which it decidedly and obviously and never should have been thought to have done, because it was a unique creation, typical of a lab creation. And it was near the Wuhan, came out near the Wuhan Institute, and the Wuhan Institute was making them, and so on and so on. So there's this huge, huge web of lies. So then I looked at, probably more than anybody else, and it wasn't that hard, just to be persistent, what was the risk of an emergence from nature of a virus like SARS-CoV-2 that would affect human beings and cause a pandemic? Well, so it was very interesting. Some people approached it mathematically. They said it's 1 in 1 billion. It's basically, it's just like, imagine some great odds. There's no reason for it to happen in particular. Other people said this is clearly a tampered with virus and that requires a lab and so on and on. So I looked some more further. And I could not find, and I took a stand on this, one single proven emergence from nature of a SARS-CoV virus. Not one. There had been a pandemic that was only 8,000 known infections. None of them arose in the U.S. In 2003, it started in China. We don't know exactly where, and it spread and was contained after killing 10% of the patients. That was a serious thing of those known infections. I mean, it's always hard to get the data, right? And so it had about 800 deaths out of about 8,000 infections, and its origin was never found. I found a quote from an Israeli expert who worked with the military online, which was later taken down, saying that he had information and was written a few years ago that the original virus came out of an institute, not the Wuhan, which hadn't been built yet, but out of an institute in China. Research Institute. So then I looked at, well, how many accidental leaks were there in China? And to my shock, there were at least 4 very well documented escapes from Chinese labs in Beijing of viruses that were SARS-CoV viruses that were being tampered with and manipulated all those many years ago, 2003, 2004, in the Chinese labs, none of which were very well secure and couldn't meet an international standard for getting awarded a 4. And by the way, the only reason that they were able to get a 4 at the Wuhan Institute is that back in a year or two time as president, Barack Obama put a moratorium on the U.S. doing this kind of research, specifically doing enhancement of viral harms. And so Fauci wanted to outsource it to the Wuhan Institute, going through an organization. This was above board. It wasn't like he did it secretly, going through an organization called Echo Health. And so he personally awarded them from NIAID the P4 level of security. It's quite bizarre. I mean, all the stuff that goes on. And then I found that there were at least 2 more leaks in the Far East, one from Singapore and one from Taiwan. That made 6. The current one, which was obviously either a leak or a purposeful release, was number 7. And that left only one and that had never been shown to be either a leak or a spontaneous emergence. So we had 7 leaks to no known emergences. The danger isn't nature. danger isn't what Fauci was saying, that human beings, he said in one of his articles, because he's like, he's very much like one of these new world order people, or very much like he operates, you know, according to Klaus Schwab's model. And what is that called? It's just escaping my mind right now. The Klaus Schwab model of
the Great Reset.
Yeah. He operates according to that. And, that's just getting big government together with big billionaires together with big corporations. Yeah. And that's what he did. He got NIH and NIAID together with Bill Gates and together with, big corporations, and NIH went into business with him. The whole NIH ended up owning half a patent to Moderna's pseudo vaccine. And I mean, all of this stuff, it's like so amazing. And to try to even contain it in my head is amazing that I'm able to do it now. And it all is about this making billions of dollars through partnerships with the government and getting money into the hands of individuals in the government, and especially into their institutes, which gives them more power and control. So it was very clear that what was going on was an orchestrated lie, series of lies, multiple lies, and that this virus obviously came out of a lab, and all the evidence pointing to the Wuhan lab. And now we discover an interesting confirmation of this just came out last few days, which says through Freedom of Information, an organization got emails within NIH and NIAID between Fauci's group and Collins's group with China in March. I think it was February, March, right after the virus was released and causing a pandemic. And they got this information that a Chinese researcher had sent into the NIH to be posted on its public research data facility, which is free for established scientists to put their work up on. It's not peer-reviewed. It just goes up right away, makes it available to scientists around the world. And it looks like it was the actual genome for the Chinese SARS-CoV virus, the China virus. And this, of course, freaked out the Chinese communists. And China got in touch with NIH and NIAID and said, take that down. There was a little going back and forth, and they took it down. So we get these international collaborations where the Chinese power system and the global predators who work so closely with them come ahead of U.S. security, honesty. They come ahead of everything. And it's the value of billions and billions of dollars that they get from the globalists and the Chinese supporting their research and their activities, and it's power. I think all of these men, including Fauci, have enough money that they don't even need anymore. Fauci's fixed with life for life with his something like, it's a little more than I think, about a half a million dollars. He's the highest paid U.S. Employee. He's higher than the president. He's been there so long. He's so clever. So he's, and then he's got these amazing benefits that come, amount of money that you get as a retirement. I mean, it's more power. It's power, 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 and then money thrown in.
Yeah. Well, we are up against a break. I want to, when we come back from the break, I want you to elaborate more on what you talk about in the book, in Chapter 7, I believe. You go on about Fauci, but Bill Gates, Forbes, the Koch brothers, and their victims. Get into some of that. Event 201, all this pre-knowledge, it appears, in planning. So y'all stick with us when we get back from the break. We'll dive deeper into these global predators. And the name of the book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. And that is by Dr. Peter Breggin and his wife, Ginger Breggin. I encourage everybody to go to the website, wearetheprey.com, and order the book, or all the major booksellers have it too. So stick with us. We will be right back. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the cure. Okay, everybody, we are back. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. Just a reminder, this show and all our other shows will be archived on the radio show archive page on our website, veritasmedical.com. So y'all go check that out. Also, it's on Apple iTunes, so go there and to listen to all past shows also. We are talking with Dr. Peter Breggin, best-selling author, and his latest book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. Y'all go, I would say this is the encyclopedia, the desk reference, the go-to book if you want to know the ins and outs of what's really going on with this whole COVID-19 pandemic. So go to wearetheprey.com and get a copy of your book, and get a few copies for your kids and your grandkids, because depending on who's writing the history books, there's going to be a totally different version of what really happened. And there are over 1,100 footnotes to this book documenting where this information came from. So Dr. Breggin, let's jump right back into it. And I mentioned before the break, talking about in chapter 7, you kind of connect some dots and expose some things regarding Bill Gates and Forbes and the Koch brothers. And could you kind of elaborate on that a little bit for our audience?
Sure. Let me do it in two pieces. First, I want to talk about the master plan. Now, I don't know how this happens, but probably in the middle of the night with fingers flying over the keyboard, I start thinking, I'm going to put in plan everywhere I can. And up pops the first evidence, a complete PowerPoint presentation between a group by Bill Gates with the World Health Organization, 2017, disclosing the master plan for everything that's going to happen under COVID-19. And then later, again, just doing the same thing and popping around and thinking, I've got more, there's more. We still haven't found the original plan. Bang, up it comes. And I found the original master plan for the whole thing. And it's called the CEPI, that's CEPI, the CEPI Preliminary Business Plan. And it's the business plan for the handling of the next pandemic. And it mentions SARS-CoV and in other places in the same year. We have Johns Hopkins writing a monograph about SARS-CoV being the next pandemic. So they're already zeroing in on it, which really makes one think they know now they can make these things in the lab, and they're thinking, well, if we don't get a leak, we're going to release it by such and such a date. And I think they were thinking about around 2021. They were not anticipating the surprise election of Trump, who is the only anti-globalist president we've had since early times in the history of the nation. I mean, George Washington definitively said, we will not get involved in foreign entanglements. And of course, that's all we do now, and one kind or another. This master plan was about 100 pages or so of a very glossy bulletin kind of thing, monograph. It was written to entice investors. Now, I don't think it ever went public in any way at all, because no one had ever seen it before. One of the things that made clear twice in the master plan, and once in the slideshow, was that all of this was going to result in the drug companies in which Gates was investing getting all of their, quote, direct and indirect costs covered. Now, where's that cover going to come from? Well, it's going to come from the federal governments of the world, particularly in the U.S. So right away, they were working with people to make sure that the federal government was going to fund all of this, including indirect expenses, was just like a carte blanche for getting money. And furthermore, that if there was an excess, that it wasn't going to go to the taxpayers who were funding this, you and me, and paying for it with taxes and inflation, it was going to go back to Bill Gates's brand new fund created with Fauci and a few other, not Fauci, with Klaus Schwab and a few other people. And it was going to, the surplus was going to go to them. I don't know what ever happened with that surplus concept. I've not seen any follow-up on it. But it wasn't going to go back to the U.S. Treasury where it should have gone, excess profits. And it outlined who they were working with in all of this and what was going to happen. And they were outlining by that time how they had already been developing what would later be called warp speed. So that was not something created by Donald Trump working with the drug companies. I think they fooled him into thinking that. They already were developing with Pfizer and Moderna in particular, these warp speed, very, very rapid methods for producing vaccines, and they were going to be already planning on mRNA and DNA vaccines, and they were already planning on Moderna and Pfizer being the top dogs, and they became the top dogs in the U.S. market, because remember, innumerable companies wanted to get in on this with vaccines. But the chosen favorites way back in 2015-16, at least probably earlier, were Moderna, an organization that these predators created that had never produced a thing, and Pfizer. So all of it was laid out, and they had to figure out how to control the federal bureaucracy in the U.S., because that was going to lead the way. If they could get away with pushing this through the federal bureaucracy in the U.S., they would be followed everywhere else, and that's exactly what happened. Now, what they had to do was qualify under the FDA rules that were based on legislation for the emergency use authorization. The emergency use authorization was created by Congress for emergencies. It was first set up after 9/11. And the FDA and others modified it and made it, and the legislation made it clear it was going to be also for pandemics. And they created an organization inside an agency, a little-known agency inside the U.S. government called BARDA, which people, almost no one has heard of. And it was essentially an organization for the biological response to pandemics that would allow emergency use of vaccines and drugs by pushing them through the FDA very rapidly, unprecedented speed, and funding the whole thing, which they did by buying up, even before this very superficial FDA approval, they're already planning and then buying up the vaccines that are going to come from Moderna and Pfizer. So it's all pre-planned. It wasn't a matter of, oh, we're going to research and then approve them. They've got this all set up ahead of time. But there's a real problem in all of this, which is that, like most emergency legislation, you can't get the government to fund and just, stand on its head to get something approved unless you don't already have a treatment. So one of the conditions of success was to determine that there was no effective treatment. So they went to work, working with the CDC, the FDA, NIH, Fauci in particular, announcing early on that there were no effective treatments, and in particular, not hydroxychloroquine, which had long been used for many purposes, for viruses, and had been experimented on in 2003-04 in labs during the first epidemic of SARS-CoV, and had been advocated as the potential treatment for the next pandemic. So it was all set up to use it. Doctors have been using it for decades. I'm a real expert in adverse drug effects, do a huge amount of work, multiple legal cases, multiple books, scientific articles on adverse drug effects. I researched it. It was just about the most safe drug I'd ever seen. I don't remember, 50, 60 years of use, hardly any deaths reported, and those because of accidental overdoses. Very safe. And the same with ivermectin, and a drug that was so good, the man who invented it got a Nobel Prize for it, treating parasites. But these drugs get used in a lot of ways. And these were perfect drugs. They would have qualified for use because they were approved by the FDA for other purposes. And since they were so safe, they would have been qualified for any doctor in the United States, even a psychiatrist like me if I want, which they wouldn't do, to go ahead and treat patients with these drugs. So they had to get rid of them. They had to have a stopper. They had to have people who would declare absolutely that these drugs were not usable, make up stories about them, fake studies. They actually created fake studies where they killed their patients in the studies with overdoses, and then had the New York Times and the AMA, without any scientific review, declare these studies meant you couldn't use the drug because it was killing patients. It's that bad, Ben, that horrible. And we found all of this. So what did they do to really be sure they could control things? Well, there was a fellow named Rick Bright. Rick Bright began working directly with Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab and the whole team, World Health Organization, behind the preliminary plan. He began actually helping with the master plan in 2015-16, even though, and his name is, you know, on big committees of the plan, and in the book, Rick Bright, he's a kind of a real deep state guy. He's worked for drug companies. Now he's worked for various government agencies. And he's like a bureaucrat, but he's much bigger than that. And just before Trump takes over, he's appointed by Barack Obama to be the head of BARDA, the organization that will make the main decisions on all these important elements, because it's the organization that enforces the EUA and administers it. So first they train this guy up by bringing him in, and I don't know if they paid him, but loving him up and letting him help develop the business plan with Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab and the World Health Organization. Then they get Barack Obama to appoint him make him the head of BARDA. They're all set. They own BARDA. But even that wasn't enough, because they really wanted to control all of this. So they then go and they get the previous head of BARDA, a guy named Hatchett. They get this Dr. Hatchett, who has been the five-year, not permanent, but not temporary, I forget the term, but the head of BARDA for 5 years. So they get him and they make him the life CEO of Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab's organization that I told you about, CEPI, which is making the master plan. You talk about planning?
Unbelievable.
This is out the ceiling. They own the organization that is going to organize and direct exactly what's done with the vaccines and the drugs. So then Trump, after this thing gets going, Trump has gotten in touch with, by a man who's become a dear friend of mine. He and I are both Jewish. Ginger, by the way, is Christian. His name is Zev Zelenko. He's one of the great men that wrote an introduction to the book. Zev Zelenko gets very close to Trump, makes friends with Rudy Giuliani, and convinces them to use hydroxychloroquine, for which, by the way, he gets really driven out of New York State, essentially, and has to go to Florida. Trump, therefore, then announces to people, remember, that he's taking hydroxychloroquine as a preventive, and this huge jerk from the conservative TV station. I'm blocking on that. So much data. Yeah, from Fox. After Trump announces this, he actually starts screaming on TV, murder, he's murdering people with this, he'll kill people with this. It was just awful. And then they fixed this study I told you about that kind of came from Brazil. They actually killed patients with overdoses, not even of hydroxychloroquine, but the older and somewhat more dangerous, but not very dangerous drug, chloroquine. And they put it online, and in 2 days, it's in the New York Times and on the website of the American Medical Association's journal. So, I mean, they really hit back really, really hard. But Trump goes ahead anyway in that period of time, and he orders the release of 60 million doses of hydroxychloroquine. This is the worst nightmare for 10 years of planning, because this planning goes back to 2010 at least, when Bill Gates announces the decade of the vaccine. I mean, he announces it with Fauci. I mean, that's how far back the planning goes, and with Klaus Schwab. Announces it at the World Economic Forum in Davos. I mean, it's how all this planning goes back 10 years to that big announcement. This is the end of all of that if there are 60 million released. So they had taken good care of it. The order comes down from the from HEW, HHS now, I'm sorry, Health and Human Services. The president, who is the executive over all of us, is ordering the release of these drugs to the public. And Rick Bright, who has no such specific power, probably, doesn't matter, takes it on himself and says, I won't release it. I declare it too dangerous and unproven. That certainly isn't his job. And he refuses to carry out the orders of the president. Trump waffles around. He doesn't readily fire Rick Bright. Bright stops Trump dead in his tracks. Amazing, amazing. Now, just to make sure that people understand the conspiracies are real, Rick Bright then makes believe he's this wonderful bureaucrat. He's he's just an administrator. He's got nothing to do with anything political when he's been working for Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab. He's being taken advantage of, and all the press is so, poor guy, nasty Trump. And then he quits the federal government. Trump removes him from that office. He quits the federal government, and he goes to work for the Rockefeller Foundation. Big vaccine supporters, is their chief vaccine guy. And when I go to his biography, he brags about helping the development of the original preliminary business plan. The original, he calls it just CEPI, the CEPI business, the CEPI plan. he brags about it. He doesn't say, and boy, I was right there with Bill Gates and the World Health Organization, Klaus Schwab, and Fauci and a whole bunch of us, you know. Oh, man, we were just celebrating this. He didn't say that, you know, just that he was involved with this CEPI, which is a fund foundation, you know. One of these foundations meant to support the drug companies and Bill Gates and so on and so forth. So, I mean, what a picture. I know it's a lot to tie up, and I often don't do it, but you've given me a lot of time, and I just thought I'd tie up that little piece because it really shows how you cannot exaggerate the planning to make COVID-19 happen, and in the process, to basically very deeply wound, if not take down, one Western democracy after another. You know, Australia, Canada, and the U.S. Because they are the only ones. We are the only ones, these Western democracies, who can stand up to global predators. If we don't, they don't have any enemies. And I'll finish with that thought that Klaus Schwab has announced, you know, in his book in 2020, that the only thing in the way of globalists, doesn't call them global predators, of the globalists and globalism are patriotic democracies that won't put up with it, won't give up their autonomy, their sovereignty, like the United States under Donald Trump. He's very specific. Mm. That they just go after Trump. That's why you end up with these two impeachments and you end up with all these attacks on him, and you end up with people like Rick Bright going after him and Fauci going after him, because they're all fighting for the lives and the power and the money of the global predators.
Yeah. So this CEPI plan that you found, and it's laid out very clearly, does that tie into what seemed to be like a quick practice run, dry run, that event 2007 or whatever it was, October-ish 2019, right before this pandemic got
started? it's just all part of it. And a lot of people know that in 2019 they had a mock pandemic, and they actually organized it around a SARS-CoV virus, and it was literally in October, maybe a month before the virus is released. Maybe 2 months, so it's not entirely clear. And people aren't necessarily clear on the facts, but this was formally supported, this war game, by Bill Gates and by Klaus Schwab. It was formally supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and by the World Economic Forum. These tie-ins are incredible. And furthermore, that it was done by Johns Hopkins, which is actually the Bloomberg Public Health Center of Johns Hopkins. And Bloomberg is another one of the big, and I go into him in quite some detail in the book, Michael Bloomberg, former mayor. He's a supporter, like all these people are, of Communist China and Xi Jinping. They've all come out for saying that it's a superior system, and they all make tons and tons of money, you know, in the huge Chinese market where the government is so corrupt you can just get things done, and so lacking in legal controls that you can get anything done you want if you pay for it. Mm-hmm. And they'll pay you anything you want to get influence, like they did with Hunter Biden and his father, Joe Biden. Yeah. So, I mean, that's basically this awful big story that we cover in just a lot of detail. And it really led us to understand for the first time. I mean, it's actually turned, the book turned out to be something that I never anticipated, because I've written about politics and I've written about different things over the years, but you know, it wasn't what I mostly did. It was mostly what I did was psychiatry and the drug companies and FDA. That was like, I was really an expert, testified in court, psychiatry, drug companies, and the FDA. And a little bit the CDC and the and a lot the NIH. I was also very much involved in public reform work against NIH. So that was my bailiwick, and doing a lot of it with Ginger for the last 40 years with Ginger, and about 20 years without her beforehand. And the story is just unbelievable. And what I did do, what Ginger and I did do, and what I wrote was much more than we ever expected. It's like there was an invisible hand guiding me. It became the deepest dive into the New World Order. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't even thinking about New World Order until very late in the book, because what I was looking at was a segment of the New World Order that was controlling what could be called the health empire. There's also the military industrial complex empire. There's also the banking empire. And this was the deepest dive made into the most up to date. Most of the deep dives are into the banking, and they're into the military industrial complex, but there's nothing very, very new coming in the way of good books about them. Many good books about China and their influence on the U.S., which we learned about and read. But this book is the freshest, deepest look into what turns out to be a big segment of the New World Order. And it's so much is in that, that if you read this book, you will know what's going on in the Ukraine. And it's totally different than what you're being told.
Yeah.
So whenever you see something like the Ukraine, where it's contradictions, it doesn't make sense, people seem to be getting senselessly killed, and horrible things are going on, ask yourself, where do the global predators fit in?
Yeah.
And it's really clear.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have a few minutes to do that, or if I should come back and do that, or we can just... I've been talking about it elsewhere, but I've got a pretty strong grip because of this book on what's going on in Ukraine. So the book really applies to what's going on in the world.
Yeah, we've got about 2 minutes. I don't know if that's enough time.
Oh, okay. But I can tell you in a word.
Yeah.
That they want to destroy Putin because he is an anti-globalist. This violent, hateful man wants a Russian empire, not a global empire. He wants to be in charge and dictator. And so he is a terrible thorn in the side. He's somewhat like Trump. That's why they tried to make believe the two of them were related to each other when they're not. Mm. They're very different people, and they're in different worlds. So that's number one. And number two, Zelensky is a very corrupt man who is deeply attached to the New World Order, and to give speeches at Davos, and loves Davos, and says that he was inspired to go into politics by Trudeau, one of the nastiest of the New World Order people. So it's much more complicated than you think what's going on there.
Yeah. Well, you've done a fantastic job of bringing clarity and kind of putting all these different pieces of this puzzle together. It's like the puzzle box.
Thank you.
The puzzle box top got burned, and there's nothing to guide us there, but you've put all these pieces together so well. And, you know, it just makes sense. I think the hardest thing for people, just your regular, you know, person out there on the street, loving your neighbor, it's hard for us to imagine there could be a conspiracy of evil and of people that really would not consider loving their neighbor, and that would consider killing people even to gain the power. And like you said, it's beyond the money. Like Gates and all these others have plenty of money. So it's this philosophical, this belief system that's driving
it's them. Really, I think you've hit at the last minute on the major block to people seeing this. So when you have trouble imagining people conspiring together to take over the world, think about the 20th century. You had Hitler. He conspired. He took over vicious conspiracies and counter conspiracies and took over Europe, slaughtered the Jews and millions of other people. You've got the same thing with Lenin and Stalin in Russia, conspiring to take over Russia, killing 40, 50 million people in the process, many of their own people. You got Mao in China conspiring and fighting other conspiracies against him, taking over mainland China, and probably killing 100 million Chinese in the process. There are violent people in the world conspiring to take it over. Any one of those three people, plus the Japanese military, would have happily taken over the world, yeah. or if necessary, colluded to do it with others, if the U.S. hadn't entered and with the Western nations defeated them.
Right. That's a good point. And just because the weaponry is different, it's not the grenades and bullets and all that. It's an information war. It's a biological weapon war. So it's a totally different setting from that standpoint, but it's the same thought process, people that want to take over this world. So thank you, Dr. Bregan, for putting all this together. It information's power, and power brings some measure of peace, I guess, for some people, but when we live in this world of so much confusion, so many lies and the corruption, so having a book kind of put it all together like that in such a thorough way is very beneficial. So thank you, and give our thanks to Ginger also for all her hard
thank
work
you.
And research, and we sure appreciate you being on the show.
Thank
today.
You for your work, Ben. Thank you for your good work.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you. That's very kind. Everybody go check out the website. The name of the book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. The website is wearethepray.com. Go there, buy a bunch of copies for you and your family. And have this for generations to come, because we'll need this truth documented like they've done so well. Okay, everybody, come back next week for another show. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the Cure. And for the Bregans, we wish you well and have a great day. Thank you for joining us today.
Bless you and your audience.